I have worked with multiple groups, definitely.
Okay.
Over the years, and I usually got kicked out for being too logical.
Oh, so, no.
Oh, no.
That would happen. So, yeah, because I really wanted to find a ghost. I really wanted to believe. I did everything I could. But when somebody's, you know, presenting this evidence of this picture they took with this ghostly woman standing in the window, and I'm like, that's your friend Pam.
I'm Paige.
And I'm Megan.
And this is Spooky Science Sisters.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello, you are listening to episode 23 of Spooky Science Sisters, a podcast where we present to you a science-based and probably very giggly discussion on all things strange and unusual.
This week, we are joined by two special guests, Dr. Karen Stolznow and her husband, Matthew Baxter. Karen is an author and host of the Monster Talk podcast and has been a guest before for our Roanoke episode. We're so excited to have her on again to talk about ghost hunting. Matthew, or Matt, is a paranormal researcher who runs the Ask a Paranormal Investigator website, and which is also a YouTube series. Karen and Matthew, would you both like to say hi and tell our listeners a little bit about, I don't know, your interests, your background, all that?
Oh, I'll go first then. So it's great to be back on the show again. And my name's Karen, and I am a linguist, but strangely have this background in ghost hunting, researching paranormal phenomena. I've been doing this for about 20 years. And it's been a passion really since I was a kid. And I might have spoken about this on the last show, but I was writing ghost stories when I was 5 years old. So I've just been really interested in this kind of thing for a long time. But it's certainly a strange side interest to researching linguistics and completely unrelated. But I guess a lot of it does come into to what I do too. I mean, there are lots of claims that people can hear voices of the dead and other things like that that I can bring in some of my expertise.
Yeah, and I'm sure as a linguist you'd find it problematic that, like, Ghost Hunters International goes to, I don't know, Germany, and they're, like, talking to supposed medieval or whatever ghosts and in English.
Yes, English seems to be the language of ghosts, and also of Bigfoot. Yes.
Okay, so Matt, do you want to say hi as well?
Hi, my name is Matthew Baxter. I have been a paranormal investigator for 30-some years.
You always have to do better than me.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever you said, 2 years
more. I said
20,
you said 30, yeah.
Okay.
You are older.
We'll have to keep that going throughout this. And I have been on a lot of investigations and seen a lot of strange things. And it's interesting because while Karen has this great background that's really legitimate, I don't.
He's pretty illegitimate.
I'm pretty illegitimate. And the funny thing is a lot of the background that has helped me, I've gotten because of the paranormal, such as I am a licensed psychotherapist. And the reason for that is we had some claims come up one time of a hypnotherapy session, where this one individual brought forth all this information through his hypnotherapy session. So I looked into the hypnotherapist, found out where she got her certification, and I went and I took the same classes, found out I really liked it. And I went ahead and completed, you know, the entire course and got myself a license and everything else. But I learned that she violated a lot of the principles of hypnotherapy.
Oh, no.
In doing that. But so... it's kind of an interesting thing, you know, that a lot of my computer skills, I do computer tech support, a lot of my computer skills come from how can I adapt this to the paranormal? So it's kind of interesting that, you know, these days I don't really go on investigations so much anymore.
Not with a 5-year old.
But with a 5-year old. No. Although he does want to go on a few investigations
amazing.
Soon. So.
Amazing.
I think that Matt makes a good point in that there aren't any qualifications to be a ghost hunter or to research this kind of thing.
Yeah.
You can certainly bring whatever background you have to your research and to your investigations. But yeah, there's no degree or qualification, even though some would think that there are. I think there are a few groups out there that offer courses in ghost hunting and certificates and things like that.
And they're all crap.
Yeah, and I think what we come across repeatedly is that groups or individuals will claim that they're, you know, being scientific about things without having any scientific background or really even know that means.
You'll often hear.
Here's a really good example. Here's a good example is a few years ago, I'll say more than a few years ago, but 10 years ago, the whole thermal camera thing became a craze, and you had to go get a thermal camera, and then they would take it out of the box and run around and take pictures they didn't understand or get footage they
but it looks
understand.
So cool.
So the first thing that I did, I went and actually took the certification courses that FLIR and other companies were offering to be able to interpret and understand what you're seeing. And that's one of the big problems is they don't understand EMF detectors. They don't understand the FLIR cameras. They don't understand a microphone. They don't understand a camera. So like I say, that's where a lot of my education actually came from. It's like, oh, well, if I'm going to know about any of this stuff, I better know about it.
Right. Yeah.
Amongst the skeptical community, historically, Matt would often cop some flack, if you understand that phrase. He would be criticized for using things like FLIR cameras and EMF readers and things like that. And I think that what he was doing was very clever in that he was demonstrating how these tools really work and how they're being misused in ghost hunting.
How they don't work.
How they don't work.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And we definitely have some questions about like equipment and stuff like that lined up to ask you guys about today. So I'm super excited. I flippin' love talking about ghost hunting, despite never having gone on like an official ghost hunt. That's definitely on the bucket list now.
We're going to at some point. We have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, when the pandemic's over, you can visit us in Denver.
Yes. when it's safe for sure. But like, I mean, I live in the Chicago area. There's a bunch, you know, Paige lives up in Wisconsin and there's a bunch of groups up there. So it's like there's got to be some people doing stuff around us that we can, who will have us.
Well, Karen and I have always wanted to come check out Resurrection Mary.
Oh, yes, in Chicago.
In Chicago. So maybe we'll
cemetery.
Make a trip.
Yes. If you guys come to Chicago, we will go.
Let's
do it there.
Yeah. I mean, that vanishing hitchhiker legend is common around the country and around the globe, but that one is a very famous case.
Yeah. 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 No, that seriously. Please let us know if you guys come here to do some sort of investigation, because we'll invite ourselves. I'm inviting us already.
Sounds good. And I think Matt and I have both been involved with multiple ghost hunting groups, and I've done a lot of research by myself because taking a scientific approach or a more historical approach is usually a kind of thing a loner really does. But being involved with various groups, Matt certainly experienced this. He's worked with a lot of believers and people who are less skeptical than we are. And you've really got to be careful with the groups you associate with and work with, because you've got a lot of different theories and schools of thought.
Yeah. Well, and it's so funny. I think I learned recently that like now they're starting to differentiate people. Like you can be like, a skeptic skeptic, which I guess would be, I don't know what Paige and I are, where we don't really believe that it's real, but like we're interested in it. Or you can be like a skeptical believer, which means like you believe in the paranormal, but you're very skeptical
about to take things at
paranormal
value.
Claims and stuff. Right, exactly. So yeah, it's funny that the community has sort of like started to divide up like that.
Well, I think there was some UFO show. I can't remember which one it was, Matt. You'll remember.
Chasing UFOs.
Yeah. And what was the term that they called themselves?
Skeliever.
Skeliever, a skeptical believer. Oh. They coined a new word. But I think it's a badge of honor for a lot of people who are believers to say, I was once a skeptic until I had personal experiences that proved the paranormal. Yeah.
Yeah, because then it makes it seem more legitimate.
Totally.
Yeah, that's literally the intro to Ghost Adventures or whatever, isn't it? Like Zach Bagans is like, I was once a skeptic until I had an experience of my own. I don't remember what he says. But anyway.
I don't remember it. Probably.
I was the lunch of party DJ. And then...
Okay. Well, anyway, so we could continue chatting and not actually get to the questions that we wrote down literally forever. So we should, no, you're fine. I'm so excited because I just think, Karen, you are so cool. And like, it is so amazing that you guys are like this paranormal ghost hunting power couple. So yeah. So I just spent like the whole Roanoke episode, like, basically fangirling, and like I'll do the same thing this time. So sorry.
Oh. Yeah, we're very excited to have you back.
We're glad to be here.
While we're still kind of chatting, one of the questions that we wanted to ask, I figured it's a good time, is like, did you guys meet while you were, you know, doing like ghost hunts, or like how did you guys meet? Did you guys just kind of start doing that together?
Do you want this one, or should I take it?
Oh, you can take it.
Okay. Well, I used to have a podcast called Warning Radio, and we found this great article online about sex with ghosts.
Oh,
and
that's my spooky story then, I guess, that we're talking about this.
yeah, it is. and the article was great, and so got a hold of her and had her on the show, and I immediately fell in love with her.
Oh, that's the best.
He did say halfway through, oh, I've got a crush on you. And but it's funny because I mistook him for the partner that he was working with at the time. And I thought, oh, he's got a sexy voice.
Okay.
But yeah. Then I realized it was actually now I'm getting insulting, so I should stop.
That is the best story and just the sweetest story. Oh my gosh.
Is it? I don't know. And I always tell people, like, I met my husband online, and they say, oh, which dating site?
Yeah.
So we should start a ghost busting dating site. There's an idea.
that's a great idea.
Ghost
yeah,
lovers
like your
or
singles
something.
Singles events could be like ghost hunt.
Totally,
ghost hunting nights.
A lot of ghost hunts have been like singles events. So.
And yes, that you do.
Amazing.
Raise a good point.
Okay. All right. Paige, should we do something spooky?
Let's do it. You want to go first, Megan?
Great. Yes. Mine is super lame this week, but it's okay. The only remotely spooky thing that happened to me this week was I was sitting in our living room by myself, and our front door just sort of like popped open on its own, and it like took me a few seconds to realize like, oh, the furnace just kicked on, so it's just like an air pressure difference. But I figured it was an appropriate story for today's episode because I'm sure there's plenty of doors in old buildings that have opened by themselves, and people think like, oh,
people think it's
a ghost opening them.
Yeah.
No, it's just the heating system. So yeah, Paige, did anything spooky happen to you?
Nope, not really. I think, God, it may have been a month, 2 months ago. I don't even remember how long it was now that I talked about that car alarm that kept going off. Mm-hmm. And I was like very concerned that, so I'm in an apartment and I was like very concerned that it was like one of our neighbors setting their car alarm off because they needed help and that we were just being like total assholes and weren't helping them. And then it stopped. And like lately, it's kind of started back up where every couple days it'll go off like once or twice. And I'm sure it's just like somebody's kids playing with their keys. But every time it goes off, I think like, should I be calling the police? Should I be doing something right now?
That's the most insane conclusion that you could come to. Like, what if one of my neighbors is in dire need of help?
So I had read an article, like, I don't remember, long ago, about sleeping with your car keys by your bedside. So that way, like, if anyone ever broke in, you could turn your car alarm on and it would, like, scare them away. And like when I go out to my car in the mornings, because I'm like the only person awake at that hour, I always hold, like, have my car keys in my hands, like, just in case, like, something were to happen, I could hit my car alarm. And so I don't know, I guess I hear that and now I just assume somebody's in trouble. But yeah, I'm like convinced this is like somebody's cry for help and I'm just not doing anything about it. So
yeah, although like clearly that advice doesn't work because
right, because I'm not that advice.
Yeah, because like you're not doing anything about it. So. Anyway, I have Matthew in our notes, so I'm gonna like flip back and forth.
That's fine. Whatever you like.
Great. Did anything spooky happen to you guys recently?
Okay. Well, this is one that actually is recurring, which I suppose makes it even creepier. Lying in bed at night, if I was on my back, Karen would be to my right, and then to my left is the edge of the bed, and I was lying on my left side facing that edge asleep, and I felt this tap on my back from Karen, and I opened my eyes and somebody is standing right there next to the bed staring me in the face.
Oh,
no.
Oh, no.
And it scared the heck out of me until I realized it was my 5-year-old.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, you didn't tell me about this.
But yeah, it is recurring.
Yes. I have a almost 2-year-old. So she is like still in a crib at this point, and I am 0% looking forward to the days where she like walks into our room and then you wake up and they're just staring at you because I know what's gonna happen.
Yeah, well, and then it's just, you know, you crave getting to hear the sound of that little voice saying, "Daddy." It's a beautiful sound unless it's at 3:30 in the morning and it's just "Daddy." Yeah.
It does get quite scary, though. I mean, if it happens and you're in the middle of a dream or something and he snaps you out of that and there's this little figure there and comes running into the room, it is quite creepy.
Yeah.
Very much.
Well, I guess
but it's replaced by adoration immediately.
So. Yeah. So I guess my story isn't really that spooky. Yes. It's more kind of ironic or coincidental, but here we are talking about the article over which Matt and I met, and I'd kind of forgotten it was that article. I remember what it was. And yet here I am all these years later, maybe 10, 11 years later, writing about that same very topic, which is demon sex and sex with ghosts. So I think that's an interesting coincidence I was approached.
That's what she's been spending her days doing lately.
Yeah, yeah. I was approached to write a chapter for a book on popular psychology about demon sex. So I've come full circle, I guess.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
Goes very far back into history. Yeah. So it's lots of claims of people having sex with ghosts and demons and angels and spirits.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and totally speaks to your comment earlier that, like you basically don't have to have any qualifications to like, you know, to do paranormal stuff or investigate or whatever. But I think lately it's been blowing my mind to like meet people like Sarah and you and Rebecca, who we just recorded with, and like find out that there are all these PhDs and everything who get to do all this really cool academic work on spooky stuff. So
I wish I could claim it as part of my academic work. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the problem for me is that this, I can't really, it doesn't look good on the CV, on the resume. Writing about this kind of thing is not really linguistic. There are linguistic aspects to all of this, but that's not really recognized as being scholarly.
Well, it happens just getting a normal job. Every time I get a job, and I don't want to make it sound like, oh, I have to get a new job all the time. But whenever I have gotten a new job, I cringe for the day that someone comes up to me and goes, I saw you on TV last night. Or, you know, I was going through YouTube and this video came up on Haunted Cheeseman Park and there you were, you know. Because shortly after that, my reputation at work changes drastically. So it's always nice to be as, as
anonymous,
incognito as possible for as long as possible.
But that's happened to us a fair bit. We were at Kaiser Permanente a few months ago and I was talking with a receptionist there and she saw Matt in the background. She said, hey, is that your husband? That's that guy from TV, Ghostbuster.
Oh, wow.
So he does get recognized around here, strangely.
Well, I think we touched on this a little bit, but the first question that I had was, and Karen, you said you've been interested in this stuff since you were really little, but how did you guys become interested in ghost hunting or how did you get started?
Okay. Well, for me, I've always had an interest in the paranormal, but it really kind of skyrocketed when I was about 10 years old and I saw The Exorcist when I probably shouldn't have. And it scared the bejesus out of me. I will forever have that feeling when I saw her head spin around that first time. It really freaked me out. And the problem is that I thought, okay, I'm 10 years old. She was like 12 in the movie. I've got 2 years. So I have to figure out how to defeat this. Yeah, before my 2 years is up. So I started intensely investigating everything I could about what was written about the paranormal and started to find out very quickly that the only thing that's out there on the paranormal is opinion. Nobody had any solid facts. Mm-hmm. Everybody's writing like they know, but everybody's conflicting with everybody else's opinion. So I thought, I have to go out and do this for myself. I have to go out and find out what's really there and what's really happening. So that's how I got into it.
And how old did you say you were?
I was 10.
Good for you.
So I should have said 3 so I could have beat Karen by 2 years.
Oh, yeah. Too late. For me, as I said, I was writing ghost stories about this ghost named Zuz, which is a really great name. But very imaginative for a 5-year-old anyway. And I think it came about because this is a really far back memory, but we had some friends, my brother's friends were visiting and they were talking about a ghost that they'd seen on a nearby water tower. Just a really strange story. And so it seemed like they came from a family, maybe a religious family, and that they believed in this kind of thing. And I think it was really the first time I'd heard about the paranormal and ghosts and spirits. And I was just fascinated by the stories I was hearing from them. And then it was around maybe 1 or 2 years later that I got some books on ghosts. So I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with the Usborne series of books on ghosts and vampires and haunted houses.
I am.
But they were really...
I don't think so.
We did an episode of Monster Talk quite recently where we interviewed the author of one of those books, Christopher Maynard, and we spoke with him about this book, which is just really... So it was written in the 1970s. So I was reading it, I think, in the maybe late 80s. And it's so beloved. This series of books, they're really popular to this day. They've made more reprints of them. And so I just continued to read about ghosts and be involved in anything that I could that was connected to that. But at that time, you really didn't have much of a movement. I mean, nowadays you've got reality television, ghost adventures, and all of those kinds of shows, and you've got ghost groups. And I guess we'll talk about that soon, how that phenomenon really took off. But there was nothing then. And so I was maybe late teens, and I got involved with a group called the Australian Skeptics because they were interested in this kind of thing but didn't necessarily – believe in it or were seeking evidence to support these kinds of claims. So mm-hmm. I got involved with them and worked with them for a while, but it was kind of around that period that things started taking off in America and Australia and England, and you started having all those TV shows about ghost hunting, and everyone was suddenly into it.
Right. Okay, so then Matt had a specific question. So I think just looking into stuff about you, were you, I guess, one of the founders? Or so there's something about online, like the Brian and Baxter investigation team mm-hmm. and the Rocky Mountain Paranormal Research Society. So kind of what has happened to those groups?
Well, Rocky Mountain Paranormal Research Society is still around. I don't mm-hmm. think they're doing any investigations right now, but don't know too much about what's happening there. But the founder, Brian, and I were kind of a team since, well, I guess it was from 2007 to 2017-ish.
Okay.
We were kind of a team that you know, he still had the Rocky Mountain Paranormal Research Society that I was basically a part of. I had joined mm-hmm. up with them, I think, probably in 2003 or 2004. And they started in 1999. So,
okay.
It was just kind of one of those things that we worked together until we couldn't stand each other anymore. And like any normal relationship. And he ghosted me because that's the paranormal thing to do. We're just basically carrying on in our own ways, and mm-hmm. we both have that great history that we created to draw from. So it's
but it's only one group that you've worked with. You've worked with other groups.
I have worked with
well
multiple groups, definitely.
Okay.
Over the years, and I usually got kicked out for being too logical.
Oh, no.
That would happen. So, because I really wanted to find a ghost. I really wanted to believe. I did everything I could. But when somebody's, you know, presenting this evidence of this picture they took with this ghostly woman standing in the window, and I'm mm-hmm. like, that's your friend Pam.
I was just watching one of the YouTube videos, the Ask a Paranormal Investigator ones, and it was one of the, I can't remember the title of it, but it was like a ruins of a castle or something, and people were like, oh, this is the most convincing photo evidence of a ghost.
Right.
Yeah, and you were like, no, that's definitely a tourist. I remember seeing the photo initially, and I was like, that is a tourist standing there. Like, why would you think that's a ghost?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it might be a creepy tourist, but it's a tourist.
It's a tourist.
I'll have to send you the picture at some point. Okay, so I had a specific question about the, and we'll be all over the place because I'm just too excited to wait to ask this one. But I had a specific question about one of the Rocky Mountain, I think one of the Rocky Mountain paranormal research things, was you guys did some stuff at the Stanley Hotel.
Yes.
And yeah, so this was when I was listening to the interview that you guys did with Sarah on her podcast, and I got very excited when you started to talk about, and I meant to like write down more notes about what this means geologically, but so I'm a geochemist and a geologist. And I was very excited when you started talking about like piezoelectricity, and that people say that like that's related to why there's more activity in certain spots, because it's like related to, I don't know, people say like limestone, but then like also apparently quartz or whatever. So like quartz is why you have like quartz in your watches, because that piezoelectricity helps to keep them on time. But I had a question about that, because you guys said you pulled in the USGS, which is amazing, and they did like a soil survey, but it was my impression, I'm getting very specific, I know, but it was my impression that like, that it wasn't related to soil, that it was more related to bedrock. So like, did they look at like, you know, what's beneath the soil, like the actual bedrock in the area? Because if that's like Rocky Mountains, Okay.
The story is that when the ghost hunters first went up to the Stanley, that was one of their explanations was that the combination of quartz, magnetite, and limestone kind of created this perfect storm in a sense. And then what would happen is there would be this piezoelectric effect that would create the energy needed for paranormal activity to create that.
Right.
So ghosts could manifest using that energy. So, and as you know, for there to be a piezoelectric effect, there has to be an actual piece of these, these things, you know? And what here's the thing is they gave this as an explanation. I called up Jason from Ghost Hunters and I said, where did you get this theory? Because they were like, oh, we've been working on this theory for a long time. yeah, sure you have. And I said, where'd you get this theory? And he's like, oh, well, yeah, we went into the gift shop there at the Stanley Hotel and the guy behind the counter told us.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic research. I would not have thought to have done that myself. That's brilliant. So we thought, okay, there's got to be more to this. So emailed the USGS and said there are claims that, you know, these type of things will cause a piezoelectric effect for ghosts to manifest. But we don't even know if these things are there, if magnetite, quartz, limestone are even present. And so we see this chain of emails getting sent around the USGS as it gets sent back to us. We see all the, you know, the chain in the email and they've sent it to everybody. And suddenly the subject line has changed to ghost in our soils. So they were having a great time with this and they were very excited about doing it. So they gathered up a team and they said, well, the closest we've come to any soil surveys up there is about 10 miles away, which as you know, 2 miles is as good as 100 miles. You have to be really on site. They're like, do you think you could get us into the Stanley Hotel? And we're like, so you're asking some dude, you know, here in Colorado to get the federal government into a private place. Okay, sure, whatever, we'll do it. Like we have that kind of power. But so we went up and we got permission and got them in and we got to spend 2 days with all these different soil scientists and geologists. And it was great. It was a lot of fun to do it, but they did all kinds of different testing. And what they found was those three things do exist up there, but they don't exist as rocks. They exist as schist. So it's just powder. And you can't get a piezoelectric effect off of powder.
Yeah, like you have to have the actual, crystal.
Yeah. So, So it was a very interesting thing. They found nothing in conductivity that was out of the normal. But they did find that the bedrock was closer to the surface than they expected. Which I'm not sure of all the implications of that. I know that in one of the rooms, specifically room 401, the big haunted room, that there was enough of a vibration that would happen at times that this big armoire would basically vibrate out from the wall by, you know, inches. And it looked like something paranormal was going on. The door in that room to the closet would open and close. More often than not, that was caused by the elevator going up and down.
Oh, sure.
But so, you know, I don't know if there's implications for the bedrock being so close to the surface there. But yeah, it was closer to the surface than they expected. It was under and well under at times 50 centimeters.
Okay. Yeah, so pretty thin layer of soil, which, I mean, if it's like an erosional surface because it's the mountains are pretty, well, in geologic time, fairly recently uplifted.
I can send you the whole report if you'd like.
Yeah, that'd be great.
The Natural Resources Conservation Service. It's the first time I've been on a government report where I wasn't being accused of something. So,
I can do my little geology aside. But yeah, schist is a metamorphic rock that is created under pretty high heat and pressure. And schist can contain quartz, but yeah, like not in the sense of it's an actual,
yeah, not a crystal at that point.
That's going to form like a piezoelectric effect. So yeah. And it, so is that where that whole, like the limestone thing makes literally no sense, because like limestone is like micro crystalline at best. Like it's, yeah, that's not how limestone
works. Well, the reason they said that is when you go under the Stanley Hotel into the tunnels down underneath, it's very obviously all either very compacted dirt or limestone.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so I think they just kind of drew that. Oh, there's limestone there. Must be part of the problem. So let's go check with the clerk at the gift shop and make sure.
Yeah. But like that idea, like the limestone thing, I hadn't heard the quartz before, but the limestone thing, like I've heard it in other ghost shows and stuff. So it's like that where that whole idea originated.
That is a big part where it originated, because that was around 2003, 2002, 2003 when that happened. And then that theory just exploded.
Okay.
Other times it's been mentioned around that time, it has had to have done with some sort of theory about the running water, bringing some sort of energy to it.
Okay.
But I think a really interesting point too is that even after Matt had explained what was going on and that they brought in the USGS, and so this should have really been spread out that this, here's the reality here. I think it was Ghost Adventures continued to talk about it. And ghost hunting groups continue to go there in search of evidence on the basis of that claim, even though it had been debunked.
Well, there was a show, a documentary called The Stanley Effect, a piezoelectric nightmare, which is really the place you want to take your kids for vacation. So the interesting thing is they interviewed us in this documentary, and we told them we're going to be doing this you know, research with the federal government and all this kind of stuff. And at the end, we gave them the report that says, look, don't push this theory anymore. It holds no water. And it's a bunch of schist. And we gave that to them, and they took the little line in the report where it says that those, you know, minerals were present and used it to bolster their argument.
Correlation is not causation, people.
Well, and cherry picking should not be done like that. So I couldn't think of a good rhyme. So not one that I could use on air.
We should add two. I think we should add just a postscript to this story that Matt has been kicked out of the Stanley Hotel as well.
Yes. The basically the CEO of the company who owns the Stanley Hotel has called and said, please don't come back.
Because like you're going against the...
Yeah, we're ruining their ghost hunting, their ghost tours.
No! Paige, we got to go before they get wise that we like did the episode where we talked about how the claims were fake, because
It's okay, because the next year they had a new general manager they didn't know and invited me up to do some talks and everything. So, and we said, you might want to rethink that before you invite me. check with the head office. And we didn't get a phone call back. So.
Got it.
All right. So I think we're going to switch gears a little bit again. So Matt, this is kind of another Matt specific question. Sorry, Karen. but it looks like you were one of the investigators for the $1 million paranormal challenge. So I was wondering if you could give like a little bit of background, like a short explanation of what that was, and then what your involvement with it was.
Well, I can say that while I was one of the more visible ones in that, Karen was actually one of the investigators with me.
So it's not just a Matt question.
It is not. She never gets credit for that. But she, for several years, she was an investigator. I would say above me in that. I was just the one with the green tie that everybody saw. So
thank you. I was a research fellow for the James Randi Educational Foundation. And I was doing investigations for them and writing them up. And that's how the book Haunting America came about. But I didn't work specifically on the Million Dollar Challenge the way that Matt did with a few other people who I'm sure you're going to talk about now.
Yeah, I Banachek, if you guys know who he is, the wonderful mentalist and magic creator, who is now the president of the JREF, he was in charge of the Million Dollar Challenge at that point. And I was attending one of the amazing meetings and was very excited to get to meet him and shook his hand. And he knew who I was. And that tripped me out. I was not expecting him to know who I was. And he said I had a good reputation, which I was not expecting either because nobody's ever said that about me. And he said he would
he's
like...
He's very polite.
Yeah. I think that's the problem. He's just doesn't want to hurt anybody's feelings unless you're a psychic. And then you don't see it coming. Puns aside, he said that he wanted me to work with him and be an investigator for him. So I was very proud to do so. And so I'll talk about any aspect of that that you'd like.
Yeah. Well, I guess just like a little summary of what it is for listeners that might not know. But yeah, just like what, I don't know, anything about your involvement or how it kind of wrapped up or whatever.
Well, put simply, the Million Dollar Challenge was put in place by James Randi, the amazing Randi, to offer people that claimed that they had some sort of supernatural power an opportunity to prove it. And if you did it under mm-hmm. scientific conditions, and everybody agrees upon the protocol, so it's not like, you know, whip out any surprises on them. But everybody agrees to the protocol and we test them. And if they can pass the tests, they win $1 million. Now, there are different phases to it. You know, it's not just one test and you're in. You have to test several times to make sure that it's legitimate. And nobody's made it past the first, you know, the first go. Okay. So one of the ones I was involved in was this guy who claimed he had sort of a psychokinetic power that he could put this a foam ball that would float on water. He could put it in a bowl and then with his mind make that ball go any direction that he wanted in the bowl of water. He could will, no. If you spun a quarter on a table, he could will it to land on heads or tails. And I'm trying to remember what else about him that he was claiming. But he ended up not showing up. And I think he didn't ultimately show up because I had recreated everything he claimed he could do. You know, I was able to make the ball do the same thing he could do. I was able to get the same, you know, accuracy on the spin in the quarter and various things like that. So what we ended up doing at the amazing meeting with this one is to have some people come up on stage and see if they could keep the ball in the center of the water and not let it move anywhere. Because all he was basically doing was putting the ball there. And as soon as, you know, because of the surface tension, it would float off in one direction or another. And then he would just move his hands in that direction. And it looked like he was pushing it. So we said, okay, your task is to sit there and don't let the ball move at all. It has to sit in the center. Use your power. Gotcha. And of course, nobody could do it. Everybody failed on that one. But we've had multiple ones where we've basically just, you know, taken away all of the ways they could fake it and to see if they could still do it after that. And so far,
I can remember some pretty weird claimants over the years. I remember there was one person who claimed that she could make people urinate on command.
Cool.
So when she
just wet their pants.
Told them to. I don't think that one was ever tested, but there've certainly been some really strange claims over the years.
Do you know how many? Sure. Like approximately how many of these were tested?
It's been years worth. It started out as a $10,000.
There've been hundreds of claimants over the years, but very few make it to that point where they're tested.
Yeah. Gotcha. They get weeded out fairly quickly. Through the normal process. But it started out as a $10,000 prize. And then over the years it grew from different, you know, people donating and backing it. So it was a lot of fun to be a part of that in its kind of its heyday. Getting to work with these people and on one of them, I was actually in opposition to the million dollar challenge.
Oh, really?
Well, Banachek had to go on tour with Criss Angel, and a couple other people took over the challenge for that year, and they blocked me and Karen out of it. It was a little bit of a political power play that was going on, but we saw all kinds of holes in their protocol. And so we, with the help of Teller from Penn and Teller, kind of devised a plan to show that their protocols weren't very good, and did manage to do that. And that'll be for another show. That's our Ocean's 11 story. We'll tell that at another time, because I know we got better stories to tell. So.
Again, you guys are the coolest people ever.
Karen's role in that one was Academy Award winning, is all I can say. But we'll long story. Yeah, we'll tell that one another time.
Oh my gosh,
have us back.
Yeah, well, great. Now you guys have to be back on the show again. It's official. So is the $1 million challenge stuff still going on? Like, I'd heard of it, but only sort of in passing. I never looked that much into it.
I believe it's defunct now.
It looked like 2015 was like the last year.
Over the years, not only were there hundreds of claimants, but also James Randi would approach people, especially famous figures, and challenge them. So it was not only people applying, but also him directly challenging people. One of those people was Sylvia Brown, the psychic medium. And I think he had a clock that showed how many hours or years it had been since he had challenged her, and she accepted the challenge, but then she never followed through with that. Would have damaged her reputation for sure.
Yeah, I just I can't believe that nobody tried to make a reality television show out of that.
Back in the 90s, I believe James Randi had his own show.
Oh, did he? Oh, okay. Well, then I just don't know.
It
wasn't about challenging people in that regard. It was, it was. Yeah. I mean, I remember the graphology episode, and he would have someone who would demonstrate their powers, and then he would come in and replicate that. And then, I think finish by saying, you decide what you believe in. And wasn't it something like that?
Or he would, basically have them prove or, show what they do. And then he would come out and put in a few protocols in place to prevent fraud. And then suddenly they couldn't do it anymore. So the energy had left them.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would watch that show.
That was before its time. Yeah. I was going to say the closest thing I could think of is that Fact or Faked show. That's run by Ben Hansen, but
well, Matt's got a story
found,
there too.
He's not maybe the most reliable.
You said you have a story about him too.
Yep.
Oh my god.
Yes. Yeah. Matt's got a really good exposé on them. I wrote an article about it, but he can tell you that.
Wow.
Yeah. Basically, we were working on a TV show pilot at the time, and so we had put out this little video we were kind of hoping was going to go viral to be a bit of an advertising stunt. So we had this Ouija board where we're trying to contact somebody on the Ouija board, and the planchette just starts going crazy and keeps jumping to the X no matter what we ask. And, we freak out and have to leave the room because it's just too scary. And and the video is still up somewhere on YouTube, and people are still commenting on it, on how frightening and you don't mess with Ouija boards and all this kind of stuff. Well, we were contacted by Fact or Faked, the producers, that said, that's great. Is it real? I was careful to say that I was careful not to say it was fake, but not to say it was real. I just said it was, this was a crazy happening. And they're like, yeah, that was wonderful. We want to have them, see it on the show. So can you do it again? Can you actually film it again but make it a little crazier this time?
What?
It's like, so you want us to fake a video for you.
And offered them money for it as well.
Yeah, they offered us
$1,500.
Money. Yeah. And
so it was, proving that they were the faking ones.
Disappointing.
Yeah. So
that is disappointing.
But we found out that this is a normal thing. One of our good magician friends told us how he was And Karen, you may want to tell this story about the haunted collector.
Yeah, the haunted collector. So the show with John Zaffis, if you're familiar with him.
John Zaffis.
John Zaffis.
I don't know him.
He is the nephew of Ed and Lorraine Warren.
That's right. Yeah. So he's got a museum of paranormal artifacts. And so he had a TV show, I think he's had a few TV shows, but this one was, I can't remember the premise, but I think it was basically that people would come to him and his team of experts and they would have some kind of item that was haunted. And it might be a walking cane, grandpa's walking cane, or it might be a scary looking doll or something like that, Annabelle. And so they would research this object and look into the history of the object and determine whether it was haunted or not. And so this magician friend of ours.
Can I make a quick comment, Karen?
Oh, sure.
One of the real, I guess, ugly sides of this is, as you know, Ed and Lorraine Warren have their paranormal museum that they charge money for. So does John Zaffis. And he would get these things by going into people's houses and saying, oh, that's a haunted item. Let me just take it out of here for you. I'll just take it. And then you don't have to worry about it anymore. So he's
antiques and vintage items. Yeah. You can see where this is going.
So he's built himself quite a little museum for himself that he charges people to come see. And this show, The Haunted Collector, was basically him going and collecting stuff from people for free
and
charge.
And saving them from these negative influences attached to these things and demons.
Oh, my gosh.
So he can make more money.
Kind of thing.
What a guy.
So anyway, we have this magician friend who basically revealed that the producers of this show had come to him and wanted him to create some effects so that they could frighten the team.
No.
So they wanted like when they turned on a light to have the light bulb explode and just various things like that to scare the team.
So kind of thing is really common with these reality TV shows. And in fact, again, Matt knows this with even Ghost Hunters, that they've had alleged paranormal phenomena on the show. And he's been able to explain what was going on and had gone to members of the show and said, look, you know that this is just a perfectly natural thing, not a supernatural thing. And they've just said, we wanted to play it up, make it more interesting. And I think in the earlier days of Ghost Hunters too, their following wasn't terribly large because they weren't really finding anything. And as soon as they started finding things in quotey fingers, the show created a fan base and spawned a whole bunch of other shows.
Right. Well, I think I had read at one point, and it was something that I had noticed, that like early on, you know, they would have whole investigations where they'd come out of it and say, nope, like this isn't haunted. And then like as the show progressed, and somebody actually did the numbers, it was like as the show progressed, like basically everything that they went to was haunted all of a sudden. And we had Kenny Biddle on last fall to talk about, you know, debunking hauntings and stuff. And he, I think, also knows Jason Haas. And Luke was telling us about some specific things that had been faked on like some pretty notable episodes. So that was really earth shattering.
Well, I don't know, Matt, if speaking of shattering, if you want to talk about the glass or if you want to talk about the haunted table.
Well, yeah, the Stanley Hotel episode, for example.
We chatted about the thing where his glass broke. And I specifically remember because I used to like watch the show and think it was so fun. And I like specifically remember that episode and that glass shattering and thinking like, that's really weird. So I'd love to hear about that.
Do you know if Kenny Biddle happened to talk to him about that?
I
don't think so.
Okay. Well, here it is from Jason's mouth then, because we did talk to him about it. Basically he said, there was nothing paranormal there. He was trying to get comfortable. He was thirsty. He called down to you know, room service basically, and asked for a glass of water. And they brought him up a pitcher and an empty glass, but the glass was hot because it had just come out of their dishwasher. And it's one of those ones that kind of has the scoring around it, decorative scoring around it. And they poured this ice cold water into it. And right at that scoring, it went kink and broke.
Of course it did.
And that's it. He's like, there was nothing paranormal about it. It was a hot glass cold water.
I would like to at least believe that like the people on the show.
Believe,
you know, right. Like even if they're not doing, like even if they're not being like super scientific about it, I'd at least like to believe that they believe what they're selling us. But like, no, it's all just for ratings.
after that episode, interestingly enough, Grant and Jay became producers on the show, and they realized where the money was.
So
they had a vested interest in finding a ghost every time. Huh. So, and then you guys know about the collar tug is another good one, but and that was at the Stanley as well. But the interesting one, no, I think I just confronted him at the Stanley about that one. That was actually in England. But anyway, the table jump at the Stanley, that was another fun one where they're talking about this heavy oak table and everything. Mm-hmm. Well, you know. Karen and I sat at that very table and levitated that table with our pinkies. Mm-hmm. It's part of the board. I mean, it's
very light. No. Yeah.
And we should send you over a photo of us doing that. But and then we made a video.
Oh, please do.
Of having we made a video of that exact same table jump. I did my best Grant impersonation, which didn't come out exactly like Grant. But it's
suffice to say you don't talk to him anymore.
No, Grant doesn't like me so much anymore, but that's okay. We're not on speaking terms. That's fine. We didn't get invited to a friend's wedding because of the fact that that individual had invited Grant as well.
Yeah, and Grant
did not want us all in the same place at the same time.
Especially you. So
this is like they've got a real most amazing thing.
Well, that's the fact is that there's a lot of backstory to all of these things. What you see on television is highly scripted, highly produced, and there isn't much mystery or really ghost hunting involved. It's reality television. I think there are disclaimers on all of these shows saying this show is for entertainment purposes only. There's nothing scientific or historical about the research.
The category of the show itself is not a reality program. It's called a docu-soap. It is partially scripted.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
I didn't realize that.
It just stinks because it's what, like, people are watching it as a reality show.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And it's, you know, we had made comparisons in the past that you don't want to, the problem is people were watching these shows. When we first started really working with Rocky Mountain Paranormal, there were four investigation teams in Denver. 10 years later, after all these shows exploded, there were over 400.
All the rage.
Yeah. And that's the problem is people watch these shows and think, I can do that. That looks like fun. I'm going to go and do that. But you don't watch an episode of House and suddenly think you can do surgery.
Right. Some people do.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I personally know some people who do, but
I think that's an interesting point too, because Matt and I have seen a lot of unethical behavior over the years.
A little bit.
Do you want to tell the guys about that cemetery tour that we did?
Yeah. In Colorado Springs, there was a ghost hunting group that would conduct tours of a cemetery. And Karen was actually the one that went on this tour and sort of reported back on it. I think I had a foot injury and actually couldn't go on the tour, so Karen had to go on the tour.
I remember that I was wearing I would call them thongs, but that's a different thing in this country. So flip flops, and we were given these forms to fill out initially to sign to
say. Were you just getting a visual there?
Yeah. multiple visuals. So we were given these documents that we had to sign, these disclaimers to basically warn us that there were rattlesnakes everywhere. And we're doing this ghost tour of a cemetery at night in the dark, and I'm wearing flip-flops. So that was tons of fun.
Yeah.
And my night vision isn't very good. But, from memory, there were just some really unethical things that were taking place. I think one thing was that someone on the tour, and wasn't it a matter of the cemetery board, I think was upset, contacted us because she was upset. I think she had a loved one who had been buried in the cemetery, and she was suspicious about this group coming in and doing ghost hunting, and thought that they were maybe vandalizing things. So from memory, this group were allowing people to, if they needed to go potty, to go around the headstones. And they were also, and they were also stealing objects from the graves of children.
That's terrible.
And they were keeping them as haunted objects. And it's the kind of thing that I've seen over the years, and I've written about too, on Etsy and eBay, where people will be selling a haunted doll or selling a haunted necklace. And but often you'll see souvenirs and mementos that have been stolen from graves, especially graves of kids. And they were doing that. I can't remember anything else, but that's bad enough.
Yeah, it's it is really sad. And the things they were doing, and another things that they were doing, would they found a grave that had cool looking headstone. Well, then whoever was buried there had been a witch, and she still haunts this place, blah blah. You know, and that's really offensive to the person who's actually lying there, you know, and their family.
Oh, sure.
And so it's, I mean, the person lying there doesn't care much, but the family does.
Yeah.
So we ended up getting them banned from doing tours at that cemetery. Just because of that. That was just ridiculous. The things that we had basically caught them doing, and the lies that they were telling about, you know, all this, you know, the legends and everything. The disrespect was very bad.
They had zero understanding of history. I remember doing some research on the place. I mean, this is going back years ago, but I did some research, and everything that they were talking about was historically inaccurate. I mean, it was absolutely no respect there.
Yeah. Which cemetery was this?
It's called Evergreen Cemetery in Colorado
Springs. Manitou Springs? I thought it was Manitou Springs.
They're all kind of like right in that area. So.
Yeah. That's unreal. That's unreal. Let me just say, though, like I know that you have like the YouTube series and all this stuff, but like 100% I would watch a TV show where it was just like Matt and Karen debunking everyone's ghost shit and like spilling all the tea about it.
I would too.
And,
except you know, she's Australian, there would be no spilling of tea, just drinking.
Well, I think we have,
as the kids say.
we do have an archive of stuff that we've done. I mean, I've written about all of these things, and Matt's done various shows, and we've talked about these things. But I think it would be fun, definitely, to collate them, put them all together, and I think there's a lot of humor in it.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of disturbing stuff too.
Well, you know, over the past 10 years, we've had so many producers come to us wanting to do a TV show. By the time
I turned 40, though. They keep calling for Matt, but once you're a woman and you hit 40, then no, don't want you.
That's a whole other podcast.
Well,
that is.
Get Karen's latest book, On the Offensive, Prejudice in Language, Past and Present.
That's right.
That topic is discussed. But I would say that it's interesting because as we would get to know these producers and they would get to know us, they started to realize that they couldn't do a show with us. That not just because they don't feel the public wants the truth, they don't feel the public is intelligent enough to handle the truth. I mean, these producers are kind of terrible people.
That's not what sells.
It's not what sells in their minds. I think it would sell. But the problem is, the real problem, is almost every one of these networks had a paranormal TV show.
Yeah.
They couldn't have a show that directly yeah. opposes it on the same
yeah.
network.
Yeah.
So it got to a point where there were really yeah. no networks. I mean, even the Cooking Channel had a paranormal show. Animal Planet had their own paranormal show. So there
weren't
was
you contacted not- yeah. about a cooking ghost show, Matt? I think you were approached about that.
Yeah, yeah. And a real estate, a haunted real estate show.
Yeah.
All kinds
yeah.
of different.
Yeah, all.
Yeah, there was a ton of different yeah. ones. But the thing is once they realized that we weren't going to play the Ghost Hunters game, several of them came back and said, it would be a great show, but we can't oppose this yeah. show that's getting good ratings. In fact,
or to push us to act as though we believed in these right. things. And you know.
Yeah, had to back out of it.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
Well, good for you guys.
Well, we had to back out of a National yeah. Geographic contract because of that. We had an option agreement with National Geographic, and it was on whether the show Chasing UFOs was successful or not. Because if it was successful, then they were going to get ours started. And the problem was we did not like the way their show was presented.
Yeah.
And it was ugly. And so we kind of sent a love letter to National Geographic that ultimately got us out of our contract. So,
oh my gosh. Wow. I'm still sad. I guess that's the beauty of independent podcasting.
YouTube.
We don't have producers. We can just say whatever the fuck yes. we want.
Yeah. And frequently we do.
I have been trying so hard to censor myself this whole time.
And me too. I've been really polite.
Oh, you're allowed to swear.
Yeah. You don't have to be polite.
Ooh, you guys are playing with the corona there.
I think I was not swearing. I think I was not swearing because I'm like, I have to be on my best behavior for Karen and Matt.
I have learned so many cuss words from Karen.
From your son, now.
Yeah.
Our little guy has quite the potty mouth.
Yeah, my father said he was excited to be able to get to teach our 5-year-old son how to curse. And, you know, Karen's like, hold my beer.
Yeah. You don't know who you're dealing with.
Yeah.
But I do think that regarding these exposés and revealing what's going on behind all of these shows, I think that these are the kinds of things that Matt has been tackling with his YouTube channel and will continue to do
yes,
so too.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, he's right now made this kind of open call to people, send me your evidence, send me any mm-hmm. ghost sightings or stories that are out there. And so he's getting a huge wealth of
or
stuff from
just
TikTok.
Questions. If you got a question, I'll answer it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, this latest one. Do you want to mention that?
Oh yeah, it was basically this girl, and if you haven't seen the video, this girl claims that she was home alone and just doing this whole dance routine for TikTok, and she wasn't even going to post it, but she noticed there was something on the stairway behind her. Why would you make a TikTok video and not plan on posting it? Yeah,
yeah.
So.
Okay.
Exactly. It makes so much sense. So I start off my video saying, okay, I'm home alone and I didn't plan on posting this. And then I have my son walk behind me and wave at the camera.
Yeah. So, I 100% watched that video of yours.
Yeah. So, yeah, you just can't trust your own senses and your own memory on things because she probably remembered that she thought she was home alone. But there's too many reasons why that is an actual person and not a ghost.
Yeah, there's a couple examples. I'm like embarrassingly got into TikTok like a year ago or so, much to Paige's dismay because I send them to her and she's like, I don't want to watch these. But I do like really love all of the I like love all the yeah the ones of like, oh, my house is haunted or I have a poltergeist or whatever, and it's just like ridiculous shit
like for part two.
Yeah, there's like that one on the stairs. There's like one where she is doing some other dance and someone like, they're like, oh, shadow figure, like looks around the corner. And it's like, that's a person, like on a bunk bed or something. Like, I don't know. But there's so many examples of that. But Paige will appreciate that Kenny Biddle has a TikTok and he like debunks people's ghost sightings on there, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think one thing that Matt's been doing for many years is taking, say there's something on the news about UFOs in the sky, or maybe an angel in a parking lot, or a ghost in a gym, something like that, and recreated that phenomenon or phenomena.
Yeah, the easiest one is when the security cameras catch ghosts. That's the easiest one to recreate. So I
because
use,
they're
I like
often
to do those.
Bugs.
Yeah.
Spiders, flies, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I had to be a fruit fly wrangler on one of those, and it was really sad how many fruit flies I needlessly murdered. Because they are really hard to direct.
Needlessly murdered. I think I've murdered every fruit fly that I've come across. So
well, I guess I can kind of say that the ghosts that ended up on that video were actually ghosts of fruit flies that I killed.
Yes. Fly ghosts. Spirits of flies.
Yeah.
We the security camera stuff that we have one in our backyard, and it like routinely the motion thing on it will go off and our phones will buzz because there's like a spider that's made its home up there. So you turn it on and it's like, oh, giant spider, right? Like,
Awesome.
Yeah. So you mentioned your 5-year-old son, and I had to ask because you mentioned it on Sarah's the interview you guys did with Sarah. Did you ever post any of the paranormal preschool stuff?
Yes, there is one episode of Paranormal Preschool. It's on Facebook right now, but maybe
it's still
maybe,
on YouTube.
That might be a
you
good
should
idea
add it to the channel.
Well, I should post it actually as an Ask a Paranormal Investigator because it's classic. It's classic. And one of the phrases that he uses in this, he now uses all the time. Because, you know, he says in this episode, he's like, I've been ghost hunting since I was a little kid. And,
and he now says that about everything.
Yeah. So, you know, I take him to school this morning and he wants to bring his ukulele with him. You know, the woman at the counters are taking our temperatures. She's like, oh, do you know how to play that? And he's like, I've been playing this since I was a little kid. She almost fell on the floor.
That's too funny.
Well, so for listeners who don't know, this is they mentioned on another podcast that their preschooler had said that he wanted to be a ghost hunter, and so they were filming him like doing ghost hunting things, and the cat was like his psychic or something.
Cat is his psychic.
That's like, too funny.
She's brilliant.
Yeah. Okay. I'm so glad that a video of it exists and like can be shared with the world because that was the cutest thing ever.
Yeah.
Well, it's not too far off the reality of TV shows that are out there. You know,
right?
Episodes about or shows about kids in school who have psychic abilities. I mean, all this sort of stuff is out there. So that was really a parody of that kind of thing. But I think there's as much science in that episode as there is in a lot of these supposedly real shows.
Yeah.
So well, amazing. I, for one, am very excited to watch this video.
I will put that up on Ask a Paranormal Investigator so people can.
So excited.
Yeah, we have to do a follow-up. Yeah, well, see, the thing is there's a creature that he's very interested in. I guess you could call it a cryptid, although we know the origin of it, much like Slender Man. This one is Siren Head, and it's a really creepy creature, but he loves it. He adores it, and it lives out in the forest. So this summer, we will be going on a Siren Head hunt. And
you should film that.
That one will be videoed as well, so.
Yeah. Oh my god!
Good idea.
Wait, and Siren Head is like a thing that he found out about, or is this? I've never heard of this.
Well, if just do a quick Google of Siren Head, and you'll see more than you ever wanted to know. Or Actually, I do Ask a Paranormal Investigator. I do have an episode on it.
Oh, perfect.
Because it's,
okay, yeah,
it's
perfect.
Very related to Slender Man. And if you guys know anything about Slender Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, there's a scary element to it. So.
And I love that your five-year-old's like, yeah, let's go hunt for him.
Well, and I love that you guys are just like doing it with him. I think that's great.
Yeah. Well, the thing is you can't go to the store. You can't go to the store and actually buy a Slender Man action figure. They don't make them.
Sorry.
So I had to make one for him, and it's his favorite toy. If I had known I could make you a piece of crap and you'd think it was the best thing ever, I would save it a lot of money on all these other things I got.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, not only are you guys like the coolest people ever, but your 5-year old is like also way cooler than I'll ever be.
he's a pretty cool little kid.
He's cooler
than us.
Yeah, he is. And that's so what you want in your kids. Do better than you.
Right. Yeah, it's like only my dream that my kid Alice will be like, yeah, let's go hunt for ghosts or monsters or whatever. So.
Yeah.
I like to think that I was a pretty unflappable kid because my parents took me to see Jurassic Park in theaters when I was 5 years old. So, and that's like one of my favorite movies now, but that's like the spookiest thing that I did when I was a kid.
It's funny you say that. A spooky thing that just happened is I showed Blade is his name. I showed Blade that scene where the Velociraptors and the Tyrannosaurus Rex fight at the end just yesterday.
He was
so excited. He loved it. So.
Another coincidence.
Yeah.
Well, I can speak from experience as a former 5-year-old who saw that movie that I survived. I think I cried for part of it, but then I was all about it afterwards. So
my parents took me to see Jaws when I was 5, and I'm still afraid of the toilet.
The toilet?
Well, there's water in there. I live in Colorado.
He's very scared when we go to Australia and he goes to the beach and he's worried about sharks.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's a real
probably
life thing.
Probably with due cause,
yeah.
I don't know. Do either of you play any video games?
I am forced to play Roblox video games with Blade because he loves them so much.
But have you ever played Phasmophobia?
No, I have not.
It's basically it's just like it's a ghost hunting game. So you and like 3 other people get together, and there's like, I don't know, maybe like 10 different locations that you get to go to, and it's haunted. And then you have to collect evidence, and based off the evidence you've collected, you have to determine like what type of ghost is haunting that location.
I love it. I've heard of this. I've heard of this. Yeah.
Super fun. And we were going to ask if you guys played it, if you would be interested in streaming with us sometime, because we play all the time.
I might have to do that. Might have to do that with you, because I was doing a search to find a good topic for Ask a Paranormal Investigator. And I did like ghost hunting evidence. And the only entries that came up were from that video game.
Oh, yeah. It's everywhere right now. And like, that's the thing. So like each ghost hunt, you have to find 3 pieces of evidence, and so you get a spirit box, you get a UV light, so you can look for like fingerprints and stuff. You get
a
camera to look for orbs. You get an EMF detector to look for that. You get
a thermometer.
Yeah. So it's like, if it's cold, that is where the ghost is. What else are the main lines? But anyway, so like there'll be like 3 lines of evidence that you have to find, and then like that determines what the ghost is. But yeah, there'll be like extra stuff you have to get sometimes. Like sometimes you like get the ghost to like walk through salt or something like that. But
that sounds like fun.
And frequently we get murdered by the ghosts.
Yeah, we're not very good at this game.
Well, and I have to say, you've made me think of a couple of things here that we won't have time to talk about today, but I think we do need to come back. And one of those is that speaking of a spirit box, you know that Karen and I knew the inventor of the spirit box, and Karen did a great interview with him, and he gave us one of his own personal spirit boxes. And this was all before he died, but he is a character that should probably be discussed and you know, with Karen's firsthand, you know, accounts with him.
Absolutely.
And then the other one was this whole evidence in a ghost hunt type thing, and the making them cross over salts made me think of when Karen and I did a super paranormal punking on a local paranormal group. And
we were trying to see if local ghost hunting groups, if they were actually using the scientific method, or to see how they would conduct an investigation, and to really just experience it ourselves.
Yeah, to see what conclusions they would come up with when we knew for a fact there was no haunting in place. What would they find if we put them in a situation where it was completely benign? Mm-hmm. And we got it all on video.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Fun story.
Yeah, that one is huge. And we'll have to tell that story sometime.
Yeah. But like, do you guys just have that video, or it got released somewhere? Like,
no. See, here's the thing. The guy that we sort of exposed as being super ridiculous is also a local gentleman who has spent some time in prison, and we really don't want him to know where we live and what we did.
Even though for the longest time he was keeping in contact with you and coming to you for advice.
He was, because he didn't know he was punked. You know, he didn't realize that he had been punked, and he came to us multiple times to bring us to other situations that are also really good stories. Because I was going to mention, you know, the whole cat psychic thing that we have had places, you know, where we go to places and they're like, oh, well, our dog sensed this and that. It's like, okay, let's back up a minute. Let's realize that animals are dumb. You know, I'm like, your dog is not psychic. And how do I know your dog isn't psychic? If I take this tennis ball and I pretend to throw it, it will chase an imaginary ball. So, don't tell me your dog is psychic.
But it can sound pretty mean that we did this to this group, but we were trying to test them and to prove a point. And there's a long tradition of magicians and skeptics doing this kind of thing. James Randi had done a number of these kinds of investigations. There's a famous one about a psychic character called Carlos. But he did that kind of thing a lot to really prove to the public that we can all be fooled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. If you guys know about Project Alpha, that's another excellent example. And if you don't know about Project Alpha, you should totally look it up. And Carlos, for that matter. They are both incredible scams, pranks that skeptics have pulled. And they're a lot of fun.
And then the Peter Popov investigation as well. So you have to have Banachek on this show. I think you'd really enjoy talking with him, the mentalist that we've been talking about. And some people, I don't know if you've ever watched the TV show The Mentalist. I think that a lot of that seems to have been based on him as well. The character is very similar.
Oh, okay.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. So one question that I definitely have to ask while we have you guys on here, but in all the time that you guys have spent investigating or doing ghost investigations, what would you say is the scariest thing that's happened? Or like, what's the spookiest thing that's happened on an investigation? Or like, what's the thing that you can't quite explain?
I'll take it first. So I've written a book called Would You Believe It? And it is a bunch of stories from people who you wouldn't expect who've had paranormal experiences. And so stories of ghosts and psychic experiences, all that kind of thing. And so skeptics and atheists and scientists who've experienced these things. And so I write in there about a few experiences I've had, and I do kind of ultimately debunk them. But I think over the years I've had some weird experiences. One was it's funny now with the pandemic going on, but there used to be a place called the Quarantine Station in Sydney, in a place called Manly where I grew up. And so there were lots of really spooky goings on there. And I remember going there on a tour. They had ghost tours when I was a kid, and I went along to one with a group of friends, and we were hearing the sounds of a haunted party. So we were hearing laughter, and we were hearing champagne glasses clinking and people dancing just all kinds of voices, and yet the place was empty. The lights were off in this area, these buildings that we were going through. And so, spoiler, I figured out ultimately that they were, because we were on a headland area, and those were noises and sounds that were coming in from the mainland. So obviously I was hearing a party or something that was taking place on the mainland, and it was just, it had traveled across to this headland, but it was just so eerie, and my friends were hearing it too. So we had that kind of, multiple people who had had this same experience, and it was really creepy and really fun at the same time too. But this book of mine anyway, and Matt has a story in there too. And I don't know if you want to use that story. You've had so many things happen to you.
I have had a lot of weird things happen, but I think that the story that is in Karen's book is probably one of the best. And again, it's called Would You Believe It?
Okay.
It's a very, very cool book, but my story is the best out of all the stories in the book. just ask me, I'll tell you. Interesting thing is that there's more than one haunted hotel in Colorado. The Stanley Hotel gets all the press, but there is another one that I think is even better called the Brook Forest Inn, and it's near Evergreen, Colorado. It was kind of an old Swiss chalet type of architecture. Was built around between 1910 and 1920. I can't remember the years right off the top of my head. But we were there investigating. The great thing about it is at this point in the history of the hotel, it was actually a Microsoft certification school. So it wasn't even a hotel at all. Huh. And what would happen is they would shut it down 6 months of the year because of the weather. It's just too snowy up there. Kind of like the idea of the Shining, how the hotel would just shut down at a certain point because of the weather. So they would kind of give us the keys to the place and just go up and do your investigations. We had a really great relationship with them. So there was a caretaker up there. And when we showed up, the snow was just starting to fall, and, it looked like we were going to be in for a pretty good blizzard that night. And the caretaker was like, "Oh, great. You guys are here," throws us the keys, and he's going to the bar because he doesn't have to sit in the hotel all night. So he's off to the bar. And we're like, okay. So we go and we set up, and we're starting to, monitor everything and check things out. And it was always it was a good place to kind of hone your skills as a paranormal investigator, because they would let us go up there whenever we wanted, and we could just test whatever new theories we got on how to do this properly. So about 2 o'clock in the morning, we hear the front door basically get kicked open. The wind is blowing. It's a horrible blizzard. And we hear all these people laughing and talking, and we're thinking, oh great. The caretaker brought home the bar with him. So he brought the party home after the bar was shutting down, I guess. So, and we're just hearing, the glasses tinking and everything, and thinking, okay, well, we got to go down and tell him to shut up. It's we're supposed to be here. All these people aren't. So, head down the stairs. And as soon as we hit the landing, right basically above where the bar is down there, the sound stopped. It was complete silence. And we descended the last little bit of stairs, and it's empty. The door's closed. There's no snow on the floor. We look outside. There's not a track in the snow anywhere. We are completely isolated.
That's so scary.
And yet we heard a full bar of people having a great time. And in terms of explanations, I don't know. Every once in a while, a snowplow would go by. And especially when you're in a place that's so isolated and it's so quiet, other than the sound of occasional gusts of wind, sound can bounce around in strange ways.
Sure.
And that's the only thing we could figure, is maybe something went you know, like a snowplow went by or something and created some noise that our minds identified as something different.
Yeah.
But the extra odd thing about it is when we went back upstairs, the other team members up there were like, so, wow, you guys really must have yelled at him because, you know, it just seemed like it went silent. And we were like, okay, at what point did it go silent? And they're like, just before you came back up. So for them, the sound continued while we were down there. Because, I mean, we looked in the kitchen. We looked, you know, in the banquet room. We looked everywhere to try to find it. But the sound didn't stop for them until we were coming back up the stairs.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And I have no problem with saying I don't know. Because I'm not going to say it was ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, I mean, a story like that, though, it's why it kills me that there's like not a true, at least, you know, currently in the 2000s or whatever, that there's not like a true skeptical TV show or anything that people are seeing. Because to me, it's like that story is so much more meaningful than any of the, you know, obviously than any of the crap you see on Ghost Hunters or Ghost Adventures or you know, any of the popular TV shows. Because it's like, yeah, because like you don't know. And like you approach these things with a skeptical mind. So it like makes it that much more spooky to hear about it and think like, oh, like this is, yeah, one that has a better chance of being the real deal.
Right. Well, I mean, one of the big problems is if you're going to do science, you have to be able to have things be reproducible.
Yeah.
And how do you reproduce that? You know, we don't know all the factors. So it was just something that we experienced, and we experienced it in such a way that we can't 100% trust our senses. We can't trust the information that we had. So therefore, it's useless in a scientific sense, but as a personal experience sense, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's the reason we do this, you know.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. No, I mean, totally. Like, I would love to have an experience like that. Were there, like, stories from that hotel of people experiencing similar things in the past, like hearing, you know, party going on or whatever? Okay.
Yes. And I have had personally multiple experiences in this hotel that I can't quite explain.
Yeah.
One of them had to have been sleep paralysis, but it fit the storyline of what was going on there. So, and that's always the fun thing is when you have an experience that can be explained, but it fits the storyline of something paranormal. Mm-hmm. That makes it very interesting.
So there you go, two ghost party stories.
Yeah. All this time I've thought like, oh, I really want to go to the Stanley someday, but it sounds like where I really need to be going is this Brook Forest Inn.
Yeah. And the thing is don't expect a luxury stay. It's not the best hotel in the world.
Sure.
But I mean, it might be a little better now. They have new owners that don't like anybody with paranormal aspirations to go there. But they don't allow, you know, ghost hunters in or anything. Last I knew, they didn't. But and then, you know, there was one of my Ask a Paranormal Investigator episodes where I talked about a group that we actually brought up there for the purposes of training. They wanted to investigate up there, and the owner said, not without Rocky Mountain Paranormal helping you and giving you some training. And we thought, okay, let's give that a shot. And it didn't work. Mm-hmm. They ignored everything we told them to do and did everything wrong. And now it resulted in a great episode of Ask a Paranormal Investigator because they got one creepy picture of this thing in the dark, you know, and it turns out it was nothing. But the explanation for it's a lot of fun. But
I think at a number of places we have basically prevented future ghost hunting groups from being able to go there, not because we've destroyed everything, but because we've gone in and tried to explain the activity and to also talk about the dangers of paranormal groups coming in and destroying things.
And that kind of outreach we feel is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, good. Yeah, like I said before, good for you guys, and it's great that there are people out there like you to kind of, I don't know, right the wrongs of the other ghost hunters, the not so great ghost hunters.
Well, one of the great solvings that we did that Karen did, I think more than anybody, was, and we want to tell this next time too, is when we went and hung out in the most haunted cemetery in the world.
Oh, how cool.
Ooh.
So that one, and we kind of figure, we not only have historical proof of what's going on there, but we went out and actually witnessed it for ourselves. And
I think that that's more fun rather than going somewhere and taking pictures and scaring yourself running around in the dark. We go in and try and solve these mysteries and to find out what's really going on. And I think it's far more exciting.
Oh, I wanted to jump up and down when we solved it. You know, it actually we're in the basement of a museum, basically going through microfiche. Microfilm, and it was when she came across the piece of evidence that we needed, I just wanted to jump up and down. It was so exciting, and I can't compare that to any ghost hunting feeling I've actually had. So solving things is way better.
Yeah, totally. Okay, well, this is just so great, and you guys are awesome, and I already was like jotting down other things for that I'm gonna want you guys to talk about on a future episode. So prepare yourself.
Sounds good.
We're always prepared.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Excellent. Okay, Paige, do you want to wrap us up?
I would love to. All right. Well, before we wrap up, though, and if she's already done this, you guys have already done it, we'll just move on. But before we wrap up, do you guys want to take a second to plug any of the work that you're doing or anything, any of the shows you have? I know we've talked about some of them already, but if you guys want to take a second, kind of.
I've been trying to plug everything all the way through this thing, so I'm going to leave the rest.
Yeah, you've
to
done
Karen.
A great job.
I think Matt's YouTube channel, Ask a Paranormal Investigator, check that out. And my latest book is On the Offensive: Prejudice in Language, Past and Present. So has nothing to do with ghost hunting, but it's about discrimination and prejudice in language. So that's more my linguistic stuff. And of course, Monster Talk, my podcast with Blake Smith. You want to go and check that out at monstertalk.org. And we're always doing something strange.
Yeah, I want to plug a couple other things. A couple of the things that we talked about, one of them was the story at the quarantine station for Karen and me with the Brook Forest Inn. That book, again, is Would You Believe It? Tales of the Paranormal from People You'd Least Expect or You Wouldn't Expect. I feel so bad I don't have the exact title.
Nor do I anymore.
Haunting America is another great one where we go to a whole bunch of great places, and most of them Karen did alone, but I was lucky enough to tag along on some of those investigations. And one of those was Silvercliff Cemetery, the most claimed to be the most haunted cemetery in the world. And also, if you want to know more about the tricks of psychics and things like that, she has her novel Hits and Misses. And it's a very good one. You can see all these on her Amazon page. If you just type in Karen Stoll's name, when you go to Amazon, you'll see all the books and the short stories and everything there. And so many of those are based on true life experiences that we've gone through. So you're going to get a lot of good information and entertainment out of those.
I should hire you as my publicity agent.
I'll take the standard industry 40%.
I'm literally adding Would You Believe It and Haunted America to my Amazon cart right now. So,
thank you. All right, spooky people. Well, that wraps up this week's episode. Big thank you, Karen and Matt, for joining us this week. You guys are great. We've already told you a million times how cool we think you are. And I know I would love to have you back. I know Megan would too. So
anytime.
For our listeners, tune in next time for our discussion on the origins of modern pop culture vampires with Dr. Holly Walters. If you like our show, please hit subscribe and share it with a friend. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpookySciPod, Facebook at Spooky Science Sisters, and at our website, SpookyScienceSisters.com. If you have any questions about previous topics, ideas for future episodes, email us at spookysciencesisters@gmail.com. Thanks for listening and stay spooky.
This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
Yeah. Science! 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 Hello, podcast fans. Want to get weird with us? Come check out the Mad Scientist Podcast. We are a weekly show that looks at the history, philosophy, and hard facts behind your biggest paranormal questions.
Did the government really pay for a psychic spy program?
Yes!
Is it true that surgery got its start in grave robbing?
Yes!
Can a roller coaster really kill you?
Legally, we can't say so for sure, but sometimes, yes! Join myself, Chris Cogswell, and my co-host, Marie Mayhew, as we examine the science, philosophy, and history behind the strange and unusual. All to discover what's possible and plausible versus what's, well, just made up. Check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Mad Scientist Podcast.